So I'd like to share with you my beginning experience of metta some years back. And it went something like this. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be peaceful. May I be happy. May I be happy. Happy. What is happy? What is happiness? Am I happy? Have I ever been happy? Are other people happy? What is this, happiness? And I went on puzzling for some time and eventually noticed that I wasn't figuring anything out and that I was just entertaining myself with distracted mind, and returned again to the phrases and the heart and just kept doing it anyways, even though it was quite rote. Not much going on. Like, what's going on? I don't know. But I had some trust or some faith that I'll just do it anyways. So I'm grateful for that. So I don't know if that resonates for you at all with your experience. And so when doing the practice, if there's a lot of questioning happening for you, just notice it as entertaining yourself and come back to the heart and the phrases and begin again. However, this being a Dharma talk, I can explore happiness as much as I want. Oh, here we go. What is happiness? I find that quite interesting. What is that, really? And I found that I'm not alone in wondering that. Maybe some of you have been wondering that. Does anybody just do a little nod thing? Is anybody wondering what this is? What is happiness? And how do I get it? Well, also, there's hundreds of books. You can, like, search how many books have the title of happy or happiness in their title. And there's hundreds. Even the Dalai Lama has a bestseller called The Art of Happiness. And, of course, a sequel, The Art of Happiness at Work. And they're both wonderful books. And there's a, you know, very popular movie recently called Hector and the Search for Happiness or Pursuit of Happiness. I can't remember which. Written, you know, adapted from a book. Lots of TED Talks about happiness. Lots of scientific studies about happiness. This songs. I won't plant the earworm, but I'm tempted. Very catchy songs about happiness. And the magazines, Oprah, Time, Psychology Today, Scientific American. Everybody wants to know, what is this? And then there's like apps, you know, for your phone thing or your iPod thing. Like download an app called Happify. For real. It's actually kind of cool. But it actually points to a lot of the teachings of the Buddha. It's pretty interesting. Yeah. So it's not just me. And our culture, all of these books and now all of this pursuit of happiness that's so prevalent, is like our culture is telling us that there's something wrong with us if we're not happy all the time. All the time. One of the headlines, newlywed Kim Kardashian, miserable already. She should be happy. And some of the advertising slogans, happiness is the smell of a new car. Of course, there's the Mick Happy meal. or Be Happy, Go Lucky, which is a brand of cigarettes. Coca-Cola's slogan, Open Happiness. Whoa. So clearly there is some confusion here about what happiness is. It's like all this from the outside in, which is kind of inside out, if you know what I mean. And so if we're not happy all the time, we may start to believe, either really obviously or subtly, that happiness is beyond our reach, that it's not possible for us. It's not available to me. Or we might feel that it's not right for us to be happy when we're so aware of the suffering of others. And so we think, well, if I can't have real happiness, I'm not going to be happy. I can't be happy all the time like it says I should be. So I might as well have pseudo-happiness, at least. I might as well have the chocolate, or the boots, or the Coca-Cola, or the one-night stand, or the drink. And we might not think it's possible for us because there's some confusion, understandably, some confusion about what happiness is. So we're getting pretty confusing messages about what it is. So what have you thought about today or yesterday that would make you happy? Different knees. I want her knees. She looks happy and still and peaceful. I wouldn't mind having that guy's hips. He looks like he's pretty happy. A different body some way. Or a different mind. Not this one. This one's not making me happy. Or maybe a different yogi job. How's that yogi job going? Yeah. Or a different person that you're doing it with. Or the bed. Or the food. Food's pretty good though, isn't it? It's pretty good. But maybe, you know, maybe not. And at home, what do we want that would make us happy? A different relationship? I'm sure that's come up at some point. A different job, a different place to live, a different home, different neighbor's dog. Or maybe just like more money. More money would be good. Then I'd be happy. Then I could just get all those things. And when I got tired of those, I'd get more. So maybe we get the new thing. Or the new relationship, or the new situation, or the next day is easier on retreat, then we think we've got it. How long does that happiness last? Even the most pleasant experience changes. It becomes no longer as satisfying. And on we go, like a hamster running in a wheel in its cage, trying to hold on to what is pleasant and to get rid of what is unpleasant so that we can be happy. So let's look a little more in depth at some of these sources of what we think will bring us happiness. My personal experience of, we'll just take knees for an example. Oh, sometimes they make me very unhappy. I want to sit like a yogi. I want to sit like Buddha. I want to sit like a meditator. And my knees say, nuh-uh, not for these few months or these few years, and you sit in a chair. And then that changes again. It changes and changes and changes. So I can't cling to that. Sometimes I'm happy with my body, sometimes I'm unhappy with my body. And with food, I think, oh, those cookies would make me happy. Well, maybe two or three would make me happier. But really, look at it. The first bite, that might be pretty happy, pretty good. And then there's like a second bite and a third bite and a fourth bite, and then you're like, bite? What? Did I have another bite? We're not even noticing, not even connecting anymore. It's lost its aliveness. We're not present with it. It's not the source anymore of the happiness. But we'll finish it anyways. Is there any job that's going to make us permanently and continually happy? Maybe being a Dharma teacher, but no. Certainly no relationship is. Sorry, honey. Everything changes. Yeah, so maybe the money. And you may know this, I'm sure. You may have heard this, that they did a study of people that win the big bucks, the big lottery. The one that you think will make it all good. And after 1 year, they've returned to their baseline of happiness, where they were. Even though the money hasn't run out. And then we think, well, yeah, but I could do it right. They just didn't do it right. I'm sure I could make that work. But no. So all of these things, we can see, hopefully, that these are all impermanent, all changing. And therefore, they're unreliable, unsatisfactory, undependable as a source of happiness. Molly spoke about this last night, about how our metta and awareness practice reveals the true nature of things. And we've all been experiencing this here, seeing that whatever thought, emotion, sensation, sound, story is arising and passing. Just, you know, you think, oh, it's this way. It's been this way the whole time. This whole retreat sucks the whole time. But really, yesterday was different. This morning was different. There was a different time in between, you know. Or maybe this retreat is awesome. It's great. I'm just going to keep it just like this. It's good right now. Don't move. Just keep it like this. So because it's impermanent, always changing, always in flux, it can't be clung to. It's unreliable. We do try to cling to it, but it's unreliable. And we can also see, know, understand, feel that it's not me and it's not mine. It's all conditioned arisings by all these things, of million and one factors that are beyond your control. We've been trying to control them and get things good and nice and comfortable, but it's not that way. It's like trying to grab a hold of water. So, how can I be happy when nothing lasts, not even happiness? Not even happiness. The Buddha understood this confusion. And thankfully, out of compassion for our suffering, he taught. So he called these the eight mundane concerns. They're also sometimes called the worldly conditions. Getting wealth, and once you've got it, you have to worry about not losing it. So getting wealth and not losing it. Getting sense pleasures. Getting everything comfortable and how we like it. Getting sense pleasures and avoiding pain. Getting praise and avoiding ridicule. Wanting a good reputation and fearing rejection. So we have gain and loss, pleasure and pain, praise and censure, status and disgrace. So how do these worldly concerns, as they're called, relate to our thoughts about what will make us happy? Do they fit in here? You know, I'll be happy if that person thinks I'm worthwhile. I'll be happy if I can get rid of these things I don't like and this pain. I'll be happy if I can get all the comforts and So it's said in the suttas where the teachings are written. These are the eight worldly conditions that spin after the world, and the world spins after these worldly conditions. I love that. That spin after the world. It's like they're chasing us. It's like the world is spinning, and these worldly concerns are like right on our tail, spinning after us. And we're spinning after them. The world spins after them as well. Talk about a vicious cycle. Wow. So the Buddha's students asked him to teach more about this, this is what he said. Gain, loss. Pleasure, pain. Praise, censure. Status, disgrace. These conditions among human beings are inconstant, impermanent, subject to change. Knowing this, the wise person, mindful, ponders these changing conditions. Desirable things don't charm the mind. Undesirable ones bring no resistance. His welcoming and rebelling are scattered, gone to their end, do not exist. Knowing the dustless, sorrowless state he discerns rightly has gone beyond becoming to the further shore. So desirable things don't charm the mind. Charming people. Charmed, to be charmed by something. It's a little seductive, isn't it? These things are seductive. We're being charmed like a snake charmer. Hypnotized. And the undesirable ones bring no resistance. Has there been resistance? Anybody? Any resistance? Yes. So the welcoming and rebelling are scattered, gone to their end, do not exist. Please understand that there's nothing wrong, inherently wrong, with these experiences, the pleasant or unpleasant. Just don't be deluded that the presence of the pleasant or the absence of the unpleasant will bring lasting happiness. So part of us can see understand that true lasting happiness is not found in beauty, in wealth, in the right job, success, youth, religious beliefs, or even personal freedom. If all these things keep being ultimately disappointing, why do we keep doing them again and again, expecting a different outcome? That's so interesting, isn't it? All these things we feel, we've known, they're ultimately disappointing. We've experienced this over and over and over again, but we keep doing them again and again, expecting a different outcome. Why is this? That's so interesting. Well, of course, somebody did a study. I love it when people study these things. Sort of. I love it that the Buddha knew it first, but anyways. So this is so good. There's like this certain event was coming up, and there's, you know, two outcomes to the event. And they ask people to predict in the coming up to the event, how are you going to feel if it goes this way or this way? And depending on what way they wanted it to go, they were like, I'm going to feel so happy if it goes this way, you know, or so disappointed if it goes the other way. And so they recorded their predicted feelings of how happy they're going to be when it goes this way. And then they recorded how they actually felt when it went that way, which was quite a bit less than what they predicted. It was not as great as they thought. It's like, yeah, it's good. But what's really interesting is that, how much later was it? A month later, they interviewed them again to see what their memory was. And their memory had gone back to, it was awesome. It went back to what they predicted they would feel. This is what we do. That's why we're, one of the reasons why we're stuck. This is called miswanting. Miswanting. So mis is like the prefix, you know, that means mistaken. Miswanting. I was picturing myself looking at these boots that I want, and I'm like, I don't want you, I miswant you. You can't fool me. This is miswanting. There's a way you've probably heard of looking at things and seeing that they're already broken. You know, this beautiful vase, this beautiful cup is already broken. Okay, I have a thing about boots. So there was this other pair of boots. I really wanted them. I waited a long time. It's before I knew about miswanting. And I finally got the boots. And I wore them before I treated them. They're this lovely light color of leather. And that very day, they're like all stained with, it rained. And they got all these blotches all over them. I should have seen in the store, they're already broken. It's already changing. It's not there. These are not the sources of happiness. Yeah, so miswanting causes us to misunderstand and mistake what is a true source of happiness. And then it causes us to misbehave. So the pursuit of these avenues of happiness is making us unhappy. Pursuit of happiness is making us unhappy. So just in case you don't want to take my word for it, or the Buddha's, or your own experience, you're in luck, it's been studied. And what they found is that as people place more importance on being happy, they become more unhappy and depressed. The pressure to be happy makes people less happy. Organizing your life around trying to become happier makes happiness the primary objective of life and gets in the way of actually becoming happy. So, how does this relate to our metta practice? Are we trying to be loving? This is not what's being asked. We're asked to be present, open to, friendly with how it is, whether it's loving or happy or not. Are you trying so hard to be friendly that you're actually being unfriendly to yourself? Viktor Frankl, a prominent Jewish psychiatrist and neurologist in Vienna, when he and his family were imprisoned in Nazi concentration camp for 3 years, he was the only member of his family to survive. And in his well-renowned book, Man's Search for Meaning, he says, "It is the very pursuit of happiness that thwarts happiness." And from his experience in the camps, he also says, "Everything can be taken away from a man or woman, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way." And this is what one of my fellow teachers here said, and I can't remember who, but it was said previously on the retreat, it's about our relationship to what's showing up. This is where our freedom lies. Our attitude, choosing, this is where we have freedom to choose. Okay, so we know it's not that, so what is it? What is genuine happiness? And where can I get it? We have this feeling, don't we, sometimes, that it's something we don't have. It's something we want. It's something we feel we don't have that we need to get from somewhere, from someone, from some condition, from doing my practice just this way. But it is not external to you. It is not something to be bestowed. Our natural state has been masked by these attachments, by these thoughts that that's the place where the happiness is, in that way, that condition, that set of circumstances. And this miswanting, mistaking, is what causes us to not see things as they are. You have what you are seeking. You are the dear one that you are seeking, the dear friend. So this is what I call the punchline. I usually have a punchline. This is it. Ready? This is my favorite definition of happiness, is genuine happiness. And it's from the author. He's a psychologist and an author of a book called Flow, The Psychology of Optimum Experience. I wish I could do justice to the pronunciation of his name, because he totally nails this, but I totally cannot say his name. His first name is Mihaly, but his last name, just to give kudos to him, it's CSIKSZENTMIHALYI. Yeah, thanks, guy. You did good, but I can't say your name, I'm sorry. Okay, so this is it. Gives me chills. Happiness is the state of mind in which one does not desire to be in any other state. Being deeply involved in the moment, we do not have the opportunity to think about anything but the task at hand. Hence, by default, we are happy. Happiness is the state of mind, and I would add, and heart, the state of heart-mind, in which one does not desire to be in any other state. Being deeply involved in the moment, we do not have the opportunity to think about anything but the task at hand. Hence, by default, we are happy. He's not saying happiness is when everything's going my way. It's not about genuine happiness, well-being, contentment, peace. It's a state of mind and heart in which one does not desire to be in any other state. Oh. So how's that going for you today? Yeah. So see, when that's just showing up, oh, I'm not wanting it to be like this. This is... So happiness can be just, oh, I could just be really present with this, with what I'm doing, the sensations in my body as I'm standing, the sensations in my feet as I'm walking, sensations in my heart, as I repeat these phrases, sensations in my mouth and body, in my hand as I eat, sensations as I'm doing my yogi job. This is our practice, isn't it? This is our metta practice, our awareness practice. Pema Chodron says, we're always trying to free ourselves from misery, but we go about it the wrong way. There are a lot of small sweetnesses in life that we ignore because they're so fleeting. It's very important to look at what lifts our spirits and brings us happiness, to cherish those moments and cultivate appreciation. Happiness comes from being receptive to whatever arises rather than frantically trying to escape what's unpleasant. So a little more about how we do this. This practice of awareness and metta counters negative emotions and mind states. It gives us the space to be present with and see their arising and passing. The precepts that Pat spoke about on our first night that are also posted in the hall, these also protect us and others through wise actions, which will bring more happiness. We develop a focused mind and an open heart. And this is possible for all of us. The Buddha wouldn't ask us to do this if it were not possible for us. Growing our awareness of interconnectedness and perhaps a sense of purpose, a purpose to lessen suffering that we see in ourselves, in each other, in our world, in some way. A more lasting sense of happiness can be known through these experiences of interconnectedness and purpose, but even these change. Sometimes we feel this and sometimes we don't. So even this we bring presence to. We deepen our ability to be present and gentle and receptive to the coming and going. The Buddha, in the sutta I was mentioning earlier about these eight worldly conditions, the Buddha tells us more about how. So, in the teachings, it's someone who understands this and lives this way is called a well-instructed disciple of the Noble Ones. So he says, now gain arises for a well-instructed disciple of the Noble Ones. And he reflects, gain has arisen for me. It is inconstant, stressful, and subject to change. He discerns it as it actually is. Loss arises for a well-instructed disciple of the Noble Ones. She reflects, loss has arisen for me. It is inconstant, stressful, and subject to change. She discerns it as it actually is. The same with status, disgrace, censure, praise, pleasure, pain. Pain has arisen for me. It is inconstant, stressful, subject to change. I can see it as it actually is. Her mind does not remain consumed with the gain or with the loss, or with the pleasure, or with the pain, not consumed with it. He does not welcome the arisen gain, loss, pleasure, pain, etc., or rebel against. So this poem from Donna Fald's called Walk Slowly. Maybe just rest in your heart. Rest your eyes. Rest awareness with your heart as you hear this. Walk slowly. It takes only a moment to breathe. A moment to be still. And just like that, something in me softens, settles, makes space for imperfection. The harsh voice of judgment drops to a whisper. And I remember again that life isn't a relay race, that we will all cross the finish line, that waking up to life is what we were born for. As many times as I forget, catch myself charging forward without even knowing where I'm going, that many times I can make the choice to stop, to breathe, and be, and walk slowly into the mystery. And we give the final word to the Buddha in the Dhammapada. If you speak or act with a calm, bright heart, then happiness follows you like a shadow that never leaves. If you speak or act with a calm, bright heart, then happiness follows you like a shadow that never leaves. Sit together for a moment. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be peaceful. May all beings everywhere truly know genuine happiness, freedom, and peace.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.